Team Dinky Town Real Estate brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, I know that recruiting season is going to be picking up here soon, and there are going to be a number of new guys signing with the University of Minnesota. And let's just have a message to those parents that might be looking to buy a place around here, like some of the other football parents or athletes. Team Dinky Town Real Estate Group can help you. And guess what? A portion of that commission that would normally go to the real estate agent is going to go to Dinky Town Athletes to support your son or daughter in whatever sport they play. It's just a win-win, Ryan.
What a personalized ad. It's almost like one of our listeners, a player parent, has actually taken us up on that advice, and they were very happy with the results. So if you are a player parent, or if you are just a giant Gopher fan and you want to try to get into the real estate game, whether it's buying or selling a home and you don't know what you're doing, you're looking for a real estate agent, go to teamdinkytown.com, peruse around there, and then when you're ready, give them a call at 612-250-8562.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to the Axe Week Victory Lap Edition as your Golden Gophers stroll into Madison and beat down the Wisconsin Badgers, a 5-7 football team that they now take away their 22-year winning streak, their 22-year bowl streak. And your Golden Gophers improved to 7-5 on the season, 5 conference wins, and the Axe is back in Dinkytown. So before we get into anything, I know this one means something a little bit extra special to our guest all season long, Dinkytown Athletes' Own, my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, when the clock hit zero and you watched those guys stroll and storm across the field to get the Axe, what did that moment elicit for you in emotions?
Yeah, for my, I guess, era of football that I played in, the Wisconsin rivalry was, I think, as heightened as it's ever been. I mean, that was what was on our minds. A lot of guys from Wisconsin playing Minnesota and vice versa. There's a lot of things that go into it. And to answer your question, Ryan, I'm not, to be honest, a hugely nostalgic person, but this is probably the one game that does that for me. You know, you see these guys in the history and the Axe itself, and it brings back a lot of memories, and it you know, the guys I played with. And doesn't matter how you get it done, how it looks in a rivalry game, it means a lot. And to see them win at Madison in particular, you know, I think about the seniors and the guys that have been there and put in the work, and really happy for those guys.
All right, let's talk about this 24-7 victory. But probably before we do that, guys, I got to give you some detail. As you know, I traveled for Thanksgiving to be with my family out in Washington here. I fancy myself kind of a technologically savvy person. As both of you know, I work in technology. We're actually staying on an island here in the greater Seattle area. It's called Vashon Island.
And what a flex there, by the way.
Well, my sister's house is just a little too small. So we're like, yeah, let's just get like an Airbnb. And it's a nice place. Like I'm overlooking the Puget Sound right now as we record.
So what you're telling me is all the Gopher Gridiron Radio money is going into your Airbnb right now. Got it. Good to know.
There you go. So yeah, we're there, and it's low tide in the morning, right? So this is a 9 a.m. game here. So my boys want to go out and play like in the rocks and all that, and with the barnacles. I'm like, oh great, perfect, that's awesome, I'll start the game late, and we'll get to it, right? Well, we come back, we're gonna sit down, we're gonna watch the game. I had a cousin come in to watch the game with us, and we go to turn it on, and I think, Derek, you have YouTube TV, so you're familiar with this. You go over to the library, you go in, and they ask you what version. And now I'm in Washington. I totally forgot that it's a different CBS channel. here. So it's CCO locally, and then it's whatever it is in Washington. So I go to play the CCO one, and they're like, well, you're geo-locked out of this. I'm like, oh, no. And then I go to the other one. It's like, oh, no problem. It'll just recorded the one here locally. Nope, it didn't do that. So I had to, I was looking and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to be able to play this. Nope, it didn't record it. So I couldn't play it. So then I'm like, well, I'm a pretty tech savvy person. I can probably spoof the geolocation thing. I spent 20 minutes not realizing that not in addition, don't you have to have like a VPN, but you also have to have a GPS spoofer to be able to spoof the YouTube TV location. At what point, I assumed it was about halftime, gave up. So we jumped in right as it was 14-0, no context. And we saw the opening kickoff of the second half. We obviously went back and watched the first half, but man, for a minute there, like I thought I was so smart to so dumb, and then ultimately landed on, yep, just really, I was just really dumb. So I'm going to be writing a formal complaint to YouTube TV because I think it's a little bit ridiculous. But here we are. We can now break down the 24-7 victory by the Gophers. But sorry, guys, it was a rough day for me yesterday on the technology front.
I can't believe that, Mr. Tech Savvy.
Yeah, it was tough. I felt dumb for definitely a good portion of the day. My dad's like, yeah, I don't care. Okay, so this game, 24-7. The Gophers were very consistent in terms of scoring. They scored seven points in the first three quarters, only got the game clinching, obviously not game clinching, but like the game sealing field goal at the end by the Wisconsin native Dragan Kesic for a 24-7 victory. So start when the Gophers were on offense on the day, probably one of their more consistent efforts on the season. They had a good amount of balance. They threw the ball 26 times, completing 17 passes for 193 yards. And then they ran the ball 39 times, something we really haven't seen much of this season, where they have more rushes than they had passes. But Darius Taylor ran for 32 yards, 32 carries for 143 yards, a 4.5 yard average. And then Marcus Major had two carries for 43 yards and a 21.5 yard average with the long of the 40. I'll say on the scoring drive, guys, just from my perspective, on most of the scoring drive, they had an explosive play. We talk about this all the time, but each drive they had an explosive play. I think on the third touchdown, the explosive play ended up being the face mask, maybe even the touchdown itself. But I'll tell you guys, the explosive plays were big, and the Gophers definitely won in the explosive play category. So, Derek, what were you able to see as the Gophers were able to find sustained offensive success, maybe not, you know, eclipsing the 40-point mark, but eclipsing a 24-point mark, or eclipsing the 20-point mark, which is very big against a team like Wisconsin?
Well, I would agree with you that, you know, we talk about the success on offense being either a blend of or heavily favored to either consistency or big plays. I think this was a day that the running game got going a bit in the second half, but for the most part, the offense didn't have a lot of just consistency moving the chains time after time. So they did rely on the big plays, on the explosive plays, and that's what it took. And I think the weather played a big factor in that too. It was a difficult day to just be a juggernaut on offense, I think, for any team in that weather. So I do think the big plays were a big factor. Schematically, Wisconsin played a lot of zone. They did mix in some man coverage, some man pressures at, I'll call it, inopportune times for them, to be quite frank. But the zone defense for Wisconsin, the wrinkle they added was they ran a lot of delayed blitz from the linebackers on zone. So waited until Minnesota got into their passing sets, pass blocking, and then brought a linebacker late. And the reason for that is I think they wanted to pressure Max Brosmer into checking down. They know he's a smart quarterback, so they didn't want to give him time to get the ball downfield. But what ended up happening is the Gopher blitz pickup, particularly from running back position, was just exceptional. I mean, I got to imagine the running back coach for Minnesota is awfully proud today looking back at the film, because, of course, the touchdown to Jamison Gears, that's the one that really stood out. Darius Taylor picked up a huge blitz, allowed, you know, the touchdown pass. But there were a number of times. I mean, Ryan, first scoring drive, late in the drive, a pass to Elijah Spencer down near the goal line. that was close to being explosive. Marcus Major picked up a huge blitz on that play, and that doesn't happen unless he picks that up. So schematically, that's what Wisconsin was after. It's just awfully tough with Max Brosmer to try and outthink him or out-scheme him. He's really smart, and I think given the weather, I think he had a really nice day.
Yeah, before I give my ode to Max Brosmer here, I do want to throw in a shameless plug that I want to thank everybody for listening all season. I want to thank all the Gopher Illustrated members for their support. I was able to travel to every game this season with your generous support of what I do. And, you know, I like to be transparent and say, we got a 75% off deal going on right now. So if you've been looking to hop in, especially with the portal opening up in a couple weeks, National Signing Day is on Wednesday. So December is the craziest month of the year for me with all of the roster transaction that goes on. And if you want to get behind the paywall, if you want to think about a Christmas gift for somebody, it's 75% off through Monday night. I'd love for you to hop in. We have such an outstanding community. I got a text from a couple of different GI members yesterday who now have become essentially best friends through the GI community, which is just, it's insane. So I just want to thank everybody for that and say, if you're looking for a gift for your Gopher fan in your life, 75% off on GI. But I'd also say Max Brosmer, I know Pro Football Focus had him with an insane grade, which was 94. That's his highest grade of the entire season. I mean, he was tremendous. And all I could think about kind of when I've had a little bit of time here to digest yesterday's game was think about last year's Wisconsin game. Think about this year's Wisconsin game with the quarterback play. I think statistically they were similar, but all I'll think about last year from Wisconsin when the Gophers lost 28-14 is the former quarterback throwing it 55 feet over Elijah Spencer's head. And then this year, Elijah Spencer with 5 first down catches in some huge spots. And Max was tremendous on the day. Minnesota won the quarterback battle handily. And that was why you brought in Max Brosmer, was the New Hampshire kid. Wasn't scared to throw it in the cold. He was very consistent all day long, made some big spot throws. I think about the first explosive play that really got Minnesota's scoring going on that third drive, the slot fade to Daniel Jackson, where it's a rainbow drop in a bucket. Great catch by Daniel, and we'll get to him. But I think Max was just tremendous. You look at the 3 touchdown drives. He was 12 of 14. I had a hand in all 3 touchdowns. I think he had like 139 yards. But when you're completing that many passes, and he's right around the single season record, I think he is within, I'd have to look, a half a percentage point of the all-time record, and he'll play in the bowl game, and we'll see if he's able to break it. But, I mean, Max was just tremendous. I think with the checks that he had, with his accuracy, yeah, he got some balls batted at the line, which to Derek's point schematically, I think that was part of what Wisconsin was going to try to do. Was they knew he wanted to check it down, and you think about some third down throws that got batted at the line where he's trying to get it to Lemeke Brockington across the middle, or he's trying to get it to Darius Taylor, and they were able to bat it down. But it's tough to really say anything negative about number 16 yesterday. It was interesting after the game, Luke, because we're sitting in there with PJ. I'd say 2 things from PJ's press conference. Number one, I think that's the first time I can remember all season where he doesn't immediately give the opposing team credit for how hard they play and how good they were, which I ain't going to tell you to read between the lines, but I thought that was interesting. And then he was just absolutely, he couldn't gush more about Max. And I think, I mean, there's a larger discussion that maybe we get into in a different episode about just the way that Max and I think Harbaugh really allowed PJ Fleck to adapt with trusting a quarterback, trusting the offense, allowing them to get creative in spots. And we'll get to some of the different play calls in this game. But I thought 16 was tremendous and played a huge part in why the Gophers won by 3 scores yesterday.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just to get some of those stats for you on the season, Brosmer, assuming the Gopher Sports stats are up to date, is 66.84% on completion percentage. He completed 250 passes on 374 attempts,
which smashes, as we talked about coming into the season, Tanner's, I think, 308 Fleck era record. So Minnesota threw the ball almost 70 times more than they had in any other game. And it's probably going to end up near 100 more by the time the bowl game comes and goes.
Yeah, he ended up with 2,617 yards, 17 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions on the season. The one thing, I thought Dan Owen had just an incredible tweet during the game. I'll read the tweet, but I can probably update the actual stats. He said, my favorite Gopher stat of the season grows. Max Brosmer now has 5 rushing touchdowns on minus 25 yards for the season.
God bless non-rush, not in sack adjusted yards, right?
Yeah. And then he said, still a ways to go to match Northwestern's Clayton Thorson, who had 9 rushing TDs on a minus 110 yards rushing in 2018. But yeah, just like, I love that stat. But yeah, just for Brosmer in general, it's a good point that he really taught PJ to trust again. I think we'll talk about this probably more in the off season, because this is obviously a Wisconsin breakdown focused episode, but it will be interesting to see if this sustains. But in this season, it's very evident that he was able to teach PJ to trust again, as you alluded to, Ryan. The other thing to note, offensively, it's just that Darius Taylor was the workhorse, right? They found explosive plays, like we mentioned, through Marcus Major, through Elijah Spencer, even through Jameson Gears. But ultimately, Taylor amassing 143 yards on 32 carries. Also, Taylor had 2 catches for 13 yards. He's always a threat out of the backfield, which adds a complexity that defense
catches on the year, which I know you have a stat about, Mr. Luke Buehr.
Yeah, I did see somewhere on Twitter on the airplane. I noticed somebody had a tweet that and I'm sorry, whoever tweeted it, I'm not going to be able to give you credit because I didn't bookmark it, but the all-time reception record for the Gophers is 52. And Darius Taylor now has 50 receptions, so he needs 3 more to be able to pass that.
Me in the bowl game, I get a little bit of narrative street.
You definitely get narrative street in the bowl game. So that should be very fun. But yeah, I do want to just focus on a couple of those scoring drives, you know, and what really went well. And we also, Derek, are going to have to touch about the offensive line and how they had to adjust after Ariante Ursary got rolled up on and twisted that ankle. He tried to give it a go again, very, very clearly couldn't. So give us a perspective on what that adjustment is like from an offensive lineman's perspective.
Yeah, that's difficult, especially left tackle. That's probably the most difficult spot to quote unquote fill in for.
Derek, before you go, I do want to give context for you and for the listeners. Is Quinn Carroll said after the game, at no point in his life has he ever taken a rep at left tackle. And I think our listeners and even myself were like, that can't be true. I mean, he's played offensive line his entire life. He was a high level recruit out of high school. So we got him afterwards, and I went to him and I said, not even at Edina, you never took a snap at left tackle. He goes, we didn't throw the ball much, so I was always on the right side. And even in practice, I've never taken a snap at left tackle. So for Ariante to go down, and then for Quinn to go in at a position, Derek, he has never played before in his entire life. How much anxiety do you think he had?
Yeah, the mental part of it, of course, and just, you know, physically, obviously that's the quarterback's right-handed quarterback's blind side. But then probably most importantly, you're facing the defense's best pass rusher. The right end is always the defense's, and probably many times the best athlete on the defense. So it's a big challenge. Now, Minnesota did put a tight end or chipped with a linebacker quite a bit, which that's good strategy. Credit to Greg Harbaugh and the offensive staff to give Quinn a little bit of help. I think that he did a really good job. I think that he did get gassed, you know, kind of ran out of gas in the second half, just because you're taking a lot of reps in that pass set at left tackle that he's not used to. So I think that caught up with him a little bit. But I mean, you look at the numbers, as particularly running the football in the second half, and they did a good job. And you know, just to touch one more thing on Darius Taylor, I watching the game back, I was very happy that it was the last regular season game, because Darius took a lot of shots in the second half. I know he got a lot of just touches, but you look at the finishes on a lot of those runs. I mean, he's putting his head down, he's lowering his shoulder, he just, you know, and in that weather, those shots are just, they sting more. And so, yeah, you know, the body blows, I think, piled up on Darius. So I just wanted to give him credit on that, too.
Do you think, too, that the reason that they kept feeding him was the fact it was the end of the season? Like, yes, that was my assumption as well.
He hadn't had a game over 25 carries all year, and he gets 32 and now gets a month to recover. I also think we can talk about Marcus Major. I think he missed a couple of holes on that initial couple of drives where Minnesota goes three and out. Specifically one where he bounced it outside on 2nd and 10, and that probably irritated the powers that be to say, okay, we're going to give Darius more opportunities today. But even on that final drive where Minnesota gets the field goal to put it away, they go 8 consecutive Darius Taylor runs. Now, the offensive line was able to pave some ways, but there's going to be a run that stands out to me where Darius cuts it back left, has a one-on-one chance in the open field to make the guy miss, and he just elects, nope, I'm going to try to run through, I think it was Hunter Wohler, the safety, to try and inflict a little bit of physicality here, which, look, I ain't going to tell you what to do and what not to do, but Minnesota, if they were going to win this game, needed their stars to be stars, and I think Darius Taylor had a game like that.
Yeah, I do want to just, sorry for clearing my throat, I do want to just highlight quickly, before we get into the scoring drives, the Gophers were 7 of 15 on third down, which was not terrible, but you know, it was significantly better than Wisconsin, who was 3rd and 4 or 3rd and 3 and 14. But ultimately, yeah, I do want to go through those scoring drives and talk through them. On the first one, obviously the highlight play was the lengthy completion to Daniel Jackson, kind of which set them up, and then Brosmer makes the plunge, but also Elijah Spencer had a pretty lengthy catch as well. Just a phenomenal sustained drive there to get that early touchdown after you've gone three and out, Derek. So that was obviously great to be able to build momentum and get on the scoreboard first.
Yeah, and a number of those third downs, in watching the game back, I would say difficult catches over the middle, a lot of stop routes trying to find the hole, soft holes in the zone. And again, Max did a great job of identifying that, but kind of having to catch those footballs in traffic for, you know, to convert things like 3rd and 4, 3rd and medium. I think that was a theme that, you know, and something that probably frustrated Wisconsin. But that first drive, I think, was first scoring drive, as you mentioned, I think it was big because, yes, they had gone 3 and out a couple times. And again, I'll just mention one more time, the weather being a factor, I just think it was one of those games that if you allowed it, this very quickly could have been a, you know, 10-7, 14-10, just a really low scoring, low energy game. So to get a couple explosives, I really felt like that got things going. And I think that we've talked about a couple times on the podcast this year is, when the offense gets some tempo and gets some juice and can play with a little bit of energy, that's where they look the best. And so I think that's what the first scoring drive did for them.
I also want to just give some love to those two senior receivers and Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer, where I think Daniel Jackson is going to go down as one of the most underappreciated receivers, probably in modern Gopher history. He's now 4th all time in receiving yards, past Tutu Atwell yesterday. And I feel like there's not enough conversation about him being one of the best Gopher receivers all time. And I know that, again, he's played with some really good receivers, spent a year with Rashad Bateman. But you look at the statistics every single year, he got better and he got better and he got better. And I think even yesterday, you look at the over-the-shoulder catch to really get the offense a jolt. You look at Paul Haynes, the former Gopher corners coach, Wisconsin electing to go man coverage on him early in the game. How did that go, Paul Haynes? With Daniel Jackson running a stop route near the front pylon for a touchdown, a diving catch out of bounds near the Wisconsin sideline, which I have no idea how that wasn't ruled a catch initially and why the replay took about 6 minutes to do because he got a toe and a knee down in bounds. But who am I to say? I think that he is just not appreciated for what he did, especially the last couple of years where he was the clear alpha. He was the clear number one target of every opposing defensive coordinator to take out of the game. and he was still able to have 75 receptions this year for 860 yards. You know, I hope that we get to talk to him one more time, because he also played through some significant injuries that I want to give him a chance to talk about. I have the utmost amount of respect for Daniel Jackson. And then I'd also be remiss if I didn't say Elijah Spencer is someone that in this day and age of college football with the transfer portal, I can't say enough good things about, where last year wasn't the year anybody envisioned for him. Transfers in from Charlotte, only has 9 receptions. He could have pouted and then transferred, but he stuck it out and turned into an absolutely gigantic part of this offense, both throughout the entire season. Yesterday, 5 receptions for 75 yards. All 5 receptions result in a first down. So he goes from 9 receptions, doesn't get to play a ton, battles some drop issues, to then he ends the season, regular season anyway, 46 catches for 603 yards. I mean, truthfully, Derek, I don't know where this passing offense would be without Elijah Spencer, especially on third down, but I just want to give him his flowers, because it's so easy in this day and age when you can just, if it doesn't go your way and you know, don't want to don't want to work on yourself per se, don't want to get better, to transfer out. And that's where Spencer had talked about prior to the season, where 2023, he figured out that he's as good as anybody at the Big Ten, but he's got to work and he's got to work and he's got to work. So I'm happy that he stuck it out, and he goes from 9 catches to 46, from under 100 receiving yards last year to over 600 this year, plays himself into probably Big Ten honorable mention. But I wanted to give you the floor on Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer as well.
Yeah, to put this into schematic terms, I will really lean into your comment about Daniel being underrated. Daniel is the one reason that defenses were not able to run more man pressures. If he's not on the field, that completely changes the complexity of defensive game plans. I think that, again, he takes them out of man coverage. Now, you could run man and bracket him with a safety. Defenses don't like to do that, because then you're putting everybody else on an island. So the fact that Daniel was on the field really kept defenses in zone coverage, which was good for Max Brosmer. So these things played off of each other. Now, and there were times it was just uncanny, and we would often text in our group chat where the defense wanted to run a pressure, and so they would, you know, very infrequently run a man pressure. Almost every time Max ended up targeting Daniel, and it was catch. So it was just very, very difficult to guard him one-on-one. In this game, ended up with a touchdown in the bottom corner in the end zone when they tried to run man coverage, as you talked about, Ryan. So all the numbers are great. Daniel's a great person. He works really hard. He battled through injuries, but schematically, that's the difference he made. And then what I would say for Elijah is, if you have a player like Daniel and you don't follow it up with a good second option, you're able to just focus completely on Daniel. The fact that Elijah stepped up this year and did as well as he did, that also changed hugely changed the outcome of this offense, because we've seen in the past, you know, where Gopher offenses just haven't had the horsepower throwing the ball. And if we were able to have one good receiver, that doesn't do that much for you, because your defense can just focus on that. So Elijah coming up big this year is, I think, what just made this passing offense all the more dynamic. So credit to both those guys, and they're both great, great young men.
Yeah, I actually had written down in kind of my notes here was to give Elijah Spencer similar praise to what I've given in the past to Terrell Smith, right? Now, Elijah Spencer is different in that he came in as a transfer. But yeah, Ryan, your point in this day and age in not just finding the next opportunity or like pouting and making the best of it, I think that is one of the surest signs of character and maturity. And now look at like a Terrell Smith, right? He's 2 or 3 with the Bears. I know they're not a great team, but he's getting to play in the NFL and getting that opportunity. I hope that Spencer gets an opportunity as well. I don't obviously know if he's going to, but just the character and that he's been able to just show by sticking it out and doing hard things, I hope that he'll benefit from that, not even just in his playing career, but in his life as well. That's always something that I really respect. Let's go back to the touchdown drives. let's go to the 7-play 75-yard touchdown that took 3 minutes and 16 seconds there. And this is the one that'll be highlighted by the Marcus Major fake tush push play that ended up going for 40. Looked like it was going to be even more than that, but he got spotted out of bounds. And yeah, just a really clever play design there, Derek. It's something that you kind of expect to come. I remember when I watched it back, having seen it for the first time, that it should be kind of evident that from a tush push perspective, the personnel grouping is different. Obviously, Wisconsin didn't really note that, but you also got to give, I think it's Bierman 85 credit for a great block there. To be able to open that lane so that Major can get up the field. But what did you see schematically?
Yeah, that was I would just highlight Frank Bierman's block. He's in space, lead blocking against a corner. That's not an easy block at all. I think Marcus would have gotten the first down, but it probably would have been tackled for 2-3 yard gain. So that's the difference between a 3 yard gain and a 40 yard gain is that lead block. But you know, the other thing. I don't want to go back to last week and rehash our conversation, but I would just say this season, I credit to the offensive coaching staff, their hit rate on these, call them gadget plays, I don't know, trick play, whatever nomenclature you want to use, their hit rate on these is incredibly high. I mean, good timing, good execution, those are things you have to work really hard on in practice. You can't pull off a play like that without putting it in weeks prior, working on it, usually repping it over 2 or 3 weeks to get comfortable with it. And you just saw that, yeah, the timing was good. It was, they got out of the defense what they hoped, which was everybody collapsed to the middle to try and stop the push, which opened up the outside. But just the execution of that looked so smooth, and, you know, the ball handling and things like that. So all around, I would say this year, I'll speak for myself. I'm always clamoring for them to run more of those type of plays because, number one, it keeps you unconventional and unpredictable, but it also helps because the defense in following weeks or even the next year, they have to plan for those. So it helps the rest of your play. So now the next time they go to do a push in the bowl game or next year, assuming the offensive staff carries over, you have to watch that as a defensive coordinator now. You can't just push everybody in the middle. You have to make sure you check that. So that's the value in running some of those unconventional plays. But they've certainly, the success rate on that, on those type of plays this year has been great.
Well, I jokingly put on the Twitter machine to my favorite uncle, Anthony Scoggins, when is the column coming about, you know, running the trick play there, and it works. But even that one, you have the Jamison Gears Y wheel delay, which as a former collegiate tight end puts a flutter in my heart, where Darius Taylor with a huge blitz pickup there, and then Jamison Gears goes up and makes the play. I mean, you just see more creativity, which is, I can't speak out of both sides of my mouth, where, you know, we clamor for it, and then when it doesn't work, you come back in this and say, well, it's dumb. You shouldn't have run that. You should have run something more conservative, something more that's a core staple of the offense. I think that's stupid. Like, again, as someone in my profession, I can't speak out of both sides of my mouth. And that's where, now that we've got 12 games of data from last year and this year, I think of Greg Harbaugh as the offensive coordinator. I think you can see his development and his growth, especially with a quarterback that he trusts mentally, where he talked about going into the Penn State game, or after the Penn State game, that Max Brosmer had 63 different checks and kills, which, imagine having that amount of trust in a collegiate quarterback that he is going to execute such an extensive game plan like that. But that's what he went out and got from the portal. I mean, a year over year from the quarterback stuff, just the way that they want to run the offense and the way it was executed, you don't get to run trick plays if you don't have a quarterback that you think can get into the right look to be able to execute the trick plays, which, to Derek's point, why is the hit rate so high? I think it's just because they got the looks that they wanted, and Max knew how to execute the different things such as that. So, you know, I think for year over year, if you're a Gopher fan, and I know outside of the head coach and the quarterback, probably the offensive coordinator is the most criticized and chastised one, and I'm not telling you I disagree with that. But I would just say, if you can't see the development from Harbaugh and the quarterback position, that the way that he went out and fixed it the way that I think he got better as the season got on. I mean, I think you're just choosing not to look at it at that point. So when you're able to essentially end the season two as one of the best third down offenses in college football, I think heading into today's set of games, Minnesota is 19th in college football on third down, went 7 of 15. Anytime you're around 50% on third down, it's a really good place to be. So I just think year over year, it's tough to not kind of be excited about. DJ took a chance on Harbaugh. He really hadn't had a ton of experience calling games, and I think he's getting better year over year.
Yeah, I think it's good to call that out. I think also your call out there of just like the execution was better, kind of just is, it reinforces the fans that the play calls are better. I don't think that they were necessarily bad last year. I like the way he called games, just lacked the execution. And then to your point of being able to have a quarterback that you can trust to get in the right calls is just, it's a cheat code, right? Like that is an absolute cheat code. The only other play that I want to make sure that we mention is on that third touchdown. You mentioned, Ryan, the Y wheel, right? That was a great play call with a great blitz pickup. I think maybe the most important play on that drive was actually the 5-yard reception to Darius Taylor, where he has to catch it and spins around. Yeah. Oh my goodness. What an athletic play by him. And then had to get five, you know, the incredible play by him to get that first down and keep that drive going.
Yeah. I mean, Darius's ability in the passing game is going to be another unsung part of this, where as we sit here today, if I were to have told the two of you going into the season that now it's going to change because there's another set of games that has to run. But as we sit here today, the Gophers have three different receivers in the top 20 in receptions in the Big Ten, with Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, and Darius Taylor's 50 receptions coming into the year. You wouldn't have believed me, but that's just kind of the way this offense had to evolve, with being a throw it to run it offense, with some of the inconsistencies up front, some of the inconsistencies and the aiming points of the running backs at times. But adapt or die on the vine, and I certainly think that this offense did it this year.
All right, let's catch a quick break, unless anybody's got any parting thoughts, and we'll talk defense.
Let's talk a little bit about that rampant Gopher defense yesterday.
Home Field Apparel again brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, the holidays are right around the corner. The Gophers are going to play on Black Friday, and Home Field Apparel has a promo code for you. It's BFCM24 to save 30% site-wide. So if you're looking for the best apparel for your Gopher-loving fan, or maybe just your college football-loving fan, again, Home Field Apparel has great vintage and throwback retro designs. 30% can be saved if you use the promo code BFCM24.
So if you're looking for some stocking stuffers, which is a couple of these new hats, the Goldie Trucker hat, the vintage corduroy hat, or maybe you're thinking about spending up a little bit with that promo code to get the Minnesota football box, which is some awesome, cool, unique, very comfortable Gopher gear. They've got everything for you. And Luke, what is that promo code for everybody?
Again, it is BFCM24, Ryan, and I have to be honest. I got my brother-in-law the corduroy trucker hat for Christmas. He's not a football fan. He is 100% a tech geek, but I got him that. He's going to look fly. It's going to look real good. Again, BFCM24 saves you 30% on home field from now until the 3rd of December, BFCM24. The Burns Insurance Agency has helped make Gopher Gridiron Radio possible for a number of years, and now it is open enrollment season. You know what? Maybe you should open enroll your home or your auto insurance. I think that's where the Burns Insurance Agency can help you, because they're going to do a lot of the work for you.
They will, and that's the beauty of an independent insurance agent. They're not going to just go with whatever their company is. They're going to put you up against 20 different companies to get you the best coverage at the best price. And if you're thinking to yourself, who actually does this? I'm telling you, I was out on Oak Street before a game just about a month ago. I had somebody come up to me and say, hey, I switched over to your father. He saved me $700 with his home and auto. So if you're thinking to yourself, do these guys actually save me money? Yes. Austin is just like you, me, and everybody else. He's just one of us. So what I want you to do, shoot him an email today, bill@insurancebyburns.com, or check them out online, insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk some Gopher defense. On the day, they only give up 7 points. Just an incredible outing. They gave up 167 yards of total offense. They gave up 37 total rushing yards for a 1.6 yard average for the team. And they also gave up 130 yards for the air. Brayden Locke only completed 15 of his 32 attempts. They weren't able to get that, obviously beloved turnover. They had opportunities, but I mean, when they got the pressure, and they did apply a lot of pressure and gave Brayden Locke a lot of looks, he really struggled. And Derek, schematically, this is something that I've wanted from a Gopher defense for some time. I've not been quiet about my preference for this kind of defensive style, and Corey Heatherman delivered not only today but throughout the season. So what did you see schematically from this Gopher defense?
Well, we've talked about in previous weeks that when this Gopher defense is running pressure looks or movement looks, in other words, they're not just playing base, their win rate on downs is just, it's incredibly high. I know I keep texting in our group chat, but if you watch on each individual play and post snap, you can tell right away whether they're running a movement call or a base call. And again, in base, I think they're relatively average, but in movement calls or pressure calls, their success rate is incredibly high. And I put some, looking into the film, I put some thought into that and looked at that. And I think maybe the theme of this podcast is trying to highlight some things we haven't covered as much. I really think we have to talk more about the coverage out of the cornerback position, specifically Justin Wally and Ethan Robinson. I mean, you're just not able to call almost any of those pressures without good man coverage on the outside. And it's been a black hole for defenses to have to throw into that. And so all of these pressure calls, although, many times we're highlighting the guys who are blitzing, whether it's Cody or Jack Henderson or Coy Parrish, because that's the flashy play, right? They're getting pressure, or maybe the defensive line, or if the quarterback releases the ball over the middle and there's, a hard hit and a stop, that's what's bringing all the attention. But really all of the only that can only happen because the coverage on the outside is so good. So I think the grades, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, have been just solid all year at the cornerback position. And in a game like this, I mean, start of the second half, they tried to take a couple shots outside, and it was just, I mean, Justin and Ethan were just exceptional. And so that's what stood out to me, and I think, again, it's something I probably haven't talked about enough this season.
Well, I also think that we spend a lot of time on the offense because everybody loves to talk offense, but we're talking about a Gopher defense yesterday that shut out Wisconsin in the first half. That's the first time a Minnesota defense has done that to Wisconsin since 1993. I mean, we're talking over 30 years ago.
I think that was the first shutout of the first half for Wisconsin all season, too.
Yep.
I think they had scored in every other game.
And I believe to start the game, there was 7 consecutive punts, plus you have the end of a half in there. They were just tremendous. I think on third down in the first half, Wisconsin's average distance to go on those third downs was 9 yards, which if you are always in third and long against this Gopher defense and Corey Heatherman's pressure looks, may the Lord bless you and keep you, and may he shine down upon you, because that is where Minnesota has made their hay all year, and that's why they were able to get off the field. Now, to Derek's point about the corners, I'm going to miss Justin Wally, and I'm going to miss Ethan Robinson, because I think both of them played well all season. I think Justin Wally finally took that next step. I think you look at, it's pretty impressive to me that Minnesota somehow didn't come away with a turnover, as they had 10 passes deflected or defended, however you want to look at it. That was an emphasis on the defensive line all week. You saw the linebackers continue to deflect some passes. Wally and Robinson had opportunities at takeaways, including on a fourth quarter drive where both of them probably should have had interceptions, somehow didn't come away with it. But I think all three levels of the defense were tremendous on Friday, and I think it starts in the run game. That was probably, if somebody wants to say that was Minnesota's best effort on all three levels in run defense against a Big Ten opponent all season, I'm not going to take that away from you, because I thought the defensive line was getting penetration. I thought the linebackers of Baranowski, Lindenberg, and Devin Williams were really good. And then I'd say this about the Coy Wonder from Esco. His willingness in the run game in November is not lost on me for a true freshman. That's the the most amount of snaps I'm sure Coy has ever played in his entire life, especially towards the latter half of your true freshman season. That's a lot of hits on you week after week after week. And with the amount of snaps that he's had to play here down the stretch with Aiden Goosby being out with his hamstring injury, and Coy Parrish led them in tackles yesterday. And he had to make some physical tackles in space near the line of scrimmage, some physical plays that if he doesn't make it, it's an explosive. Derek, I don't know what it was or why they were so motivated, if it was just the Wisconsin game, if it was trying to show everybody that this defense is better than what they've played. But their effort in the run game yesterday, 24 carries for 36 yards in total, all three levels, you have to give credit to them in the run game.
Yeah, I think it was probably their best, I would say, their best run defense of the whole season. Definitely their most physically dominant against the run, I think, particularly the front seven. But also, you know, give credit to Coy and the secondary that came up and made tackles too. But I think on the running side, just physically dominant effort the entire game. And the other side, and I don't want to, this is one of those where I don't want to take a lot away from the Gopher defense, but that Wisconsin passing offense was absolutely dreadful. I mean, just the route. The route tree stink.
I get why they fired their offensive coordinator. Peace and love. I don't know if he'll ever hear this, and if he does, I'm sure he'll call me. But like, those were some Mike Sanford-esque route trees. Where there are multiple times during that game where there's receivers 15, 20 yards down the field right next to each other. That can't be like you kept a Wisconsin. I think the point you're trying to make, and I'm going to steal it from you because that's what I do as your cousin, is you had to keep a bad Wisconsin offense bad. And how many times have we seen over the last, I don't have to explain to any Gopher fan listening to this, how many times have we seen a Wisconsin or Iowa quarterback turn into the next Tom Brady against Minnesota when they've looked poor all season? But Minnesota kept Braden Locke bad all season or all game long, Derek.
Yeah, it was just one of those, either the concept or the play call was just, I'll just call it bizarre. I mean, just head scratching and some of the things they were doing in the passing game, or it was plays where the call or the route tree was okay and they just couldn't execute it. The quarterback's throwing the ball over their head. It was ugly. Wisconsin passing the ball. And to the point where I know I texted you guys, all you need to know about their faith in the passing game is to know that down multiple scores with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, they were still trying to establish a run game. I mean, that just, at that point, that was the white flag. I mean, they were waving the white flag and it was just, and I say that with humility. I mean, we've been there. We've as a Gopher fan base and staff and team, whatever, we've had struggles offensively where it's looked like nothing's worked. But I just think that's mentionable because I think that's what happens when you have a defense that plays really well, but combine it with an offense that's just absolutely heading the wrong direction. And that's how you end up with the first half shutout and with a single digit scoring effort on defense.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at some of the advanced analytics, the sustained success from the Gopher defense is reflected in the success rate. Wisconsin had a 24% success rate. That is 0th percentile. Like, they were very, very good in just limiting Wisconsin's offense. And it quantifies just how they weren't able to get a running game going on a consistent basis. They weren't able to get any semblance of a passing game on a consistent basis going. They had plays here and there, but for the most part, they couldn't string anything together. And really the only thing that could actually help them sustain a drive was a penalty by the Gophers. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to throw shade at him personally, but like, because those kind of plays happen. It's one that shouldn't happen because he was too far out of bounds. But if you go back to that play, you know, that specific play, they were sitting, I'm trying to see here.
Third and 15.
Yeah.
Hindenburg gets him out of bounds. And then it hurts me to say this, Luke, because I'm an east side of the Twin Cities guy and Joey Gerlach,
you are.
Woodbury guy. Like it's one of the dumbest plays all season. And I'm not saying that there's some moral failing with him with that play, but that game almost turned on a dime because it would have been 4th and 15, Wisconsin. I don't know what they do because they're sort of across, they're across midfield.
They're 45. Yeah, they're at the 45.
but it's 4th and 15. That's a weird spot to be in. I don't know if you go for it, if you don't. It's a late hit out of bounds. It extends the drive. Wisconsin scores three plays later. Minnesota misses a field goal. Like that whole sequence there, you know, the irony of it, Luke, is it swings back in Minnesota's direction because of a different Minnesota native, which is when Anthony Smith draws a holding call on Riley Mulvin from Lakeville to push. It would have been, it was 3rd and 7. Then it's 3rd and 17. That field goal that Wisconsin misses from 37, I think it was, would have been good from 27. So it's not lost on me that Anthony Smith and that holding call on the Minnesota kid kind of turned it back. But it almost came to be, and we talked about it in the group chat. I know Fleck doesn't believe in momentum, but you saw that the way that the game was going and that 8-minute stretch there from the Gerlach hit out of bounds until Anthony Smith draws the holding call was not lost on me, you, Derek, and I'm sure any of our listeners.
Yeah, and specifically that after that penalty was the best Wisconsin's offense looked all day, right? They completed a pass for 16 yards, then for 9 yards, then 15 yards for the touchdown on consecutive plays. And then from there, you know, to your point, Ryan, they go on and they get to the field goal. And the penalty was huge. And by the way, Anthony Smith's new like celebration for when guys jump off sides was just had me laughing on just multiple occasions,
like the arrows, which we're also hilarious. Talking about celebrations, the most tight end celebration of all time when Jamison Gears scores, and I tweeted out the gif of it if folks want to see it. It's the entire offense then comes over and shotguns a beer. Like that is the most I thought of Co-Keefe in that moment. I don't know if Co-Keefe or that family is ever going to listen to this. The Sioux Center, Iowa boy. Shotgunning a beer for a tight end celebration is the most tight end derpy thing, and I love all of it.
Okay. Also, I sorry, we're getting off track here, but I just want to make one more comment. Kudos to Nick Callup for continuing the like crazy hair in the last game of the season that I think maybe Co-Keefe had started. Like that was also awesome. I loved that. Other things to highlight real quickly. I appreciate, Derek, that you brought up some personnel stuff, and I wanted to touch on a couple things with this too. Keeping and retaining Justin Wally has been huge. He's been a great player, probably almost more important. I want to thank all of the people that are listeners that have been long-term Dinky Town athletes, contributors, not just for like some of these transfer portal kids like Max Brosmer and Elijah Spencer and stuff, but it's the guys like Ethan Robinson. The dude had an incredible pass breakup in this game. And he's a guy that probably had other options. But Derek, you know, Dinky Town athletes and the members being able to be at the table and being competitive brought him in, and he was just an absolute incredible friend. Also, just want to talk about Jack Henderson had a really, really good game. That's a guy they brought in after having replaced a guy like Flip Dixon. Just personnel wise, just a couple guys that stood out to you guys.
Yeah, I would echo those, and also thank the Dinky Town athletes members and fans who have chosen to participate, because you know, I can't say it enough that it's absolutely made a difference. I think, you know, one thing I'll comment on specifically, that in the NIL transfer portal era, what gets so much of the oxygen is the very, very high profile, let's just call it high dollar value transfers, that if you go back and look at the analytics, you can certainly point out some successes. There's been a lot of misses, guys. I mean, just I'm not going to name any names, but what I think gets overlooked is the Ethan Robinsons and the Max Brosmers, where, believe me, we've worked really hard and the community stepped up big time to help support those guys. I don't want this to sound like we're not competitive or that we're not providing good support, but that's not the flashy, what's making the national headlines type, you know, transfers. But without the support, we're not able to add guys like that. And you can just see that what a difference it makes. I would say trust the coaching staff and their ability to find and evaluate and discover some of these guys, but then having the resources and the support to be able to bring them in is the full package.
Well, I won't have Derek commenting because I know he won't, but I even think about going into next year, trying to retain a lot of the talent with Coy and Darius.
Yeah.
And the one I even thought about, and he even commented on it on social media yesterday, with someone like Ja Joyner. I had thought it was a pre set conclusion that Ja Joyner coming into the season was going to go to the NFL. And I think if you were to ask anybody around the program, or even I would say I talked to a lot of NFL scouts in the press box. Oh, good for me. I mean, they're there. I want to bother them. It's part of my job, about what they think about different Gophers. And I would say the theme kind of in the back half of the season was, you know, Ja didn't have the season that I think the NFL thought, that a lot of us thought, where he got banged up. And I don't know how much of that kind of hindered his play, but I think there's a realistic chance now that Ja Joyner could come back for one last season, which I think he's one of the best pass rushers that the Gophers have. And you heard earlier this week with the media, Jalen Logan Redding is going to come back. Anthony Smith plans to come back. Hopefully Devin Easter comes back. And if you can get Ja Joyner back, I mean, that's a great building block for 2025. But I would also say for all of you Dinkytown Athletes members, or if you're on the fence, I mean, in this day and age, that doesn't happen without NIL support, which Jalen Logan Redding talked about, where some of it's a business decision. And because of Derek's support with Dinkytown Athletes, Jalen Logan Redding's going to come back. And if you can be old up front in the Big Ten more times than not, for as much as I think maybe the defensive line underachieved at times, that could be a huge part of things going forward, or especially here as we get into portal season and Minnesota has a lot of different areas to address, like a receiver, corner, offensive line. I'd say they probably should still get another defensive tackle. We'll see what Cody Lindenberg decides to do. And if you do that, if he goes to the NFL, you're going to need a transfer linebacker. That doesn't happen without the support of DTA. Trust me, it's not lost on me as someone who lives, breathes, and dies recruiting every single day of his life. So I do want to give a shout out to Derek. I know he won't accept the compliment or comment on the compliment, but that and the members, I mean, it's going to be, I think, as interesting of a December period because of the amount of success that DTA has had, which is why I'm excited to kind of see what ends up happening here between now and the bowl game.
Yeah, I think that's great. Just to maybe close on the defense, I just want to talk a tiny bit about the scheme and how it gave fits Derek. You know, the Gophers were able to dial up pressure. They were obviously able to keep Braden Locke thinking a number of times. And he didn't necessarily know where pressure was going. The Gophers, I think, did a pretty good job of being able to disguise coverages. They obviously used a fair amount of motion to try and identify coverages. But yeah, just I'm a big fan of this scheme. What did you see?
Yeah, I think what became a theme this year, and I'm gonna give something away. I don't think I'm necessarily breaking ground here, but I'm gonna give something away that I think, you know, I hope doesn't come back to haunt this Gophers team. But college quarterbacks, by and large, don't have the ability to play well and sit in against those movement calls we talked about. Whether it's an exchange blitz, whether it's a bring the house blitz, cover zero. The way you beat those looks is you have to sit in and try and extend the play. You can either scramble around or you have to hope that your blocking picks it up, because the longer those plays go on, the more your higher your success rate goes. It's where you're going to have guys open down the field. It's how you generate an explosive. That's how you burn a team when they run those calls. And what I saw this year is it's very different on Sundays when you watch those things in the NFL, and particularly against the very top flight quarterbacks. You just don't make those calls because they will kill you. And in college, what we just saw repeatedly this year is, I'll say it one more time, the success rate on those movement calls was so high. And I think in part because the opposing quarterbacks get sped up. They get anxious. They want to get the ball out because they see Jack Henderson coming off the edge and they think, I better get this out because pressure's coming. I don't want to take a sack. And so you force him into a check down. And I think, Ryan, you talked about this. This wasn't the flashiest year in terms of sacks, but you look at pressures and hurries and the other measurables and it's sky high because, again, the quarterback is getting the ball, has to speed up and get the ball out. And that's where I think contributes to the success rate. So this scheme, and I guess I would leave it with this. And this is something that I think, you know, could excite the fan base even more coming out of a rivalry win. As much as that was a handled victory, you call it, for the Gophers, that was two or three steps away from being a massive blowout. I mean, we talked about in our group chat a number of times, just the offense, I think, because of the weather and the inability to just create consistent plays, kept them from, you know, piling up the points. And at the same time, Ryan, as well as the defense played, to have no turnovers. I mean, can you imagine the outcome of that game with two or three defensive turnovers? I mean, we're talking, I think we were on the precipice of seeing something like a 55 donut. And I'm not joking. I mean, that's the level to which, you know, they executed and Wisconsin lacked. But so in a weird way, I think it ended up being a little bit closer than what, you know, what maybe people thought. But ultimately, it's a rivalry game. Don't get me wrong. But I'm say that positively in that I just think that's how well it went.
It's crazy to me that they didn't get a turnover in that game. Minnesota has actually now gone 10 quarters without a turnover, and they still had 20 takeaways on the entire season, which kind of speaks to the nature of the helter-skelter, chaotic Corey Heatherman style, which is very hit or miss. I still can't believe when you have 10 passes deflected, defended however you want to look at it, that none of them fell into the arms of a Gopher or they were able to secure it, which gave me flashbacks to last year where seemingly every Gopher tip landed between three Gophers or just not in their arms, where seemingly every Iowa one lands directly in their arms. Now, I'd say Minnesota had their turnover luck in the beginning of Big Ten play instead of at the end of Big Ten play. This was the first game in which Minnesota won a game in which they did not force multiple takeaways. They were 6-0 coming into the game when they forced two or more takeaways. They were 0-5 when they had one or fewer takeaways. No takeaways on the day. They're still able to win because of how suffocating they were. It's just an interesting kind of vision of this season where you go 7-5, and I know a lot of people will play the shoulda, coulda, woulda game, and maybe we end with that here in a little bit, but it's just the way that this defense suffocated them, or even just the state of the Wisconsin program, where I'm going to say this as someone who sat in the press box and was at the game, the Wisconsin fans, and I get that they had lost four in a row. I mean, you look at that stand, just the fans that attended the game, that was not, I would say, it's tough for me to gauge because I can't see underneath me in the press box from what I can see across the field and in the student section. I'm aware that the students were on break, and I'm aware that the fan base had lost four in a row. But I don't know if it was the temperatures. I don't know if what it was, but Derek and Luke, I felt like there were some fair weather fans going on, which I don't blame them to an extent, but my goodness, what has become of the Wisconsin football program in year two under Luke Fickell?
I'm shocked personally. Let me give you this disclaimer. I think that as a Minnesota fan, I and many fan bases around the Big Ten would take the last 25 years of success that Wisconsin's had. So let's put that out there and say
22
that,
straight years of winning seasons in a bowl game is incredible sustained success.
On top of that, it is unquestionably the most successful period in their program's history. Now, of course, there's a joke in there about the most successful period in your program's history, not including a national championship, but that wasn't me that said that. So again, hugely, hugely successful. Again, I'll just say humbly, I would take that any day. I would trade that and that success that they've had over what the Gophers have had any day. Now, that being said, you bring up a good point, Ryan, that I know we talked about briefly offline, which is I'm really surprised at the fair weatherness of the Wisconsin fan base. And why I say that is I born and raised in Minnesota. I spent most of my working career post college in Minnesota, and for those that have in the Twin Cities, and I think many probably share the same perspective, where if you grow up and work in the Twin Cities, you're surrounded by a lot of Badger fans. It's the Minnesota kids that go to Wisconsin and come back to work, or the Wisconsin fans that grow up in Wisconsin and then come here to the Twin Cities to work. So you're surrounded, and they've been for, you know, the better part of 20, 25 years, awfully chirpy, you know, in the office about, you know, they know when the game is, they're chirping about what's going to happen, and they're the first people to come up to you after a Badger win. They want to talk about the game. And I took that to be, I mean, a good fan base, you know, and that's, it's engagement, right? And it's been like that a long time. And I really thought that was the nature of the fan base. And it's not just this year. I think the previous year or two, we talked about this, Luke, where there were signs that of some apathy in Madison. And I've been surprised by the, I'll just call it the level of entitlement I think we've seen from the fan base there, and the apathy, and in what's been a down year, certainly, but not, I mean, this isn't a 1-10 season. And so that's been, that was, there's there are things amiss in Madison that I think go beyond just this season.
You know, it's interesting. When they made the change, I think I commented something to the extent of, it's really hard to make the stylistic change that they were going to do, right? So Fickell, I think, traditionally has been a pro style, but went to the more of the air raid approach, I think, more to try and meet college football where it's at. But I don't think McIntosh as an athletic director really did that transition any favors in the way that he set it up. I mean, everybody always talks about the championships as the bar, and I think that makes sense. But they got rid of a very well-known, well-quantified entity in Paul Christ, just to say, like, and the, we're only going up from here. But I think that that kind of transition that they're going through was risky at best, right? Or I should say at worst. It was risky, and we've seen that go over a number of times and not be particularly successful. So as much as people want to and opine for change at the head coaching position, I think that's I think the grass is not always greener. I think that's a little bit of what Wisconsin is seeing at this time.
And I think that there was some sentiment, Luke, that this change or this switchover was just going to be easy. You know, yeah. They went out and they won the press conference with the Luke Fickell hire. Everybody wanted the guy. He was very highly touted. Can't knock him for that. But I definitely think there was a sentiment among the fan base that, oh, we're going to be a passing team now, and we're going to be an air raid team. And, you know, it's a little bit arrogant to me that it, mm-hmm. you think it's going to be that easy. It's not that easy. And this comes from a fan base that we've taken so many lumps. You know, we've seen, mm-hmm. we've had so many battles, and we've come up on the short end of changes and coaching changes and scheme changes. So I think we intimately understand how tough it is. And again, I think there's been some entitlement bred there, and those, you know, those fans that were so chirpy in the office have just become, they're just sort of disappeared, you know? Yeah. And so that's been an interesting, it's just surprised me.
Yeah. I think, go ahead, Ryan.
Well, I would say, even just like projecting forward, I don't think Luke Fickell should be fired after year two, but I do think I am incredibly curious to see what the offseason is like for Wisconsin, because you got to fix quarterback. You have to fix your offense. Your defense, I think, is just okay. It's not what it was 5-10 years ago. And I'm going to tell you right now, these teams can and will change quite a bit before Wisconsin takes on Miami of Ohio on August 30th. But that schedule next year for the Wisconsin Badgers, may the Lord bless them. Sweet giblets and junipers. Just to give people a preview, they lead off with Miami of Ohio, who's the MAC champion for this year, which I don't know what they're going to look like going forward. Then they have to travel to Tuscaloosa. They have road games against Michigan, Indiana, Minnesota, and Oregon. They also have Iowa and Ohio State on the schedule. Like, a bowl game is not guaranteed at all for that team with all of the holes that they have. And that schedule, like I said, you got road games against Alabama, Minnesota, Oregon, Michigan, and Indiana. Plus, you get the MAC champion at home to open. You've also got Ohio State and Iowa on the schedule. Like, goodness gracious, is that a gauntlet for them to try and, like, Luke Fickell has a lot to fix if that team is going to be bowling next year.
Yeah, I'll just say welcome to the new Big Ten. I think that's
absolutely
that's just the kind of reality. And, you know, you could almost say that the schedule piece with almost everyone, right? Like, there'll be variances between them, but you're going to have to be able to capitalize on your opportunities like Indiana did this year with their schedule, but then you're going to have those like Rutgers that just didn't, right? I think Rutgers could have as well had a very magical season given their schedule, but they didn't do that. I think the timing of the change, I understood it from a logical perspective when Wisconsin made that change, but in part two, like, I think it was a big calculated risk. And It still can pan out, but I just don't think it is going to hit as quickly as people had thought. I still think that Fickell's a very good coach, a very good leader. Does anybody know what the team acronym means? Like, I mean, they make fun of Minnesota for all their stuff, but
I get the people, especially Wisconsin fans. I married into a Wisconsin native fan base, and while my wife could not be more apathetic about football, her family is very much gigantic Badger fans throughout. So to even hear them at Thanksgiving when we went over was very, very interesting. Now, I don't know how you guys want to end this, but I want to end it this way. With no Big Ten games to really talk about, and Luke, maybe we get Dan back on the podcast here to do kind of a Bulls. National Signing Day / Bowl preview thing coming up here. With National Signing Day on Wednesday, Minnesota won't know their bowl destination until next Sunday. And when people are listening to this, we're talking December 8th. I think there is an incredibly high likelihood of either Charlotte or Nashville, but we'll get into that with Dan. I know that a lot of people, especially this fan base, I wrote it after the game. This is my 14th year covering this team. And maybe it's recency bias. Maybe it is just because I'm so close to it now. This was as emotional of a year as I can remember for fans. I would tell you, as someone who has a lot of sources on the coaching staff, oh, good for me, that they felt it too, with how emotional every single game was, from the opener to the Wisconsin game. Everything was seemingly one possession. Everything was seemingly into the fourth quarter. You didn't know how it was going to go. And ultimately, you end up 7-5 with 5 Big Ten wins. And I hate to play, and Fleck talked about it afterwards. Trust me, I don't agree with everything PJ Fleck says, that you can't play the coulda, shoulda, woulda game. And I know a lot of fans want to of, well, what if they would have finished against Rutgers and North Carolina and Penn State? I hear you. I'm not invalidating your feelings or thoughts, folks. But also, what would have happened if Max Brosmer doesn't lead them down the field against USC, UCLA, Illinois, and then you have the Coy Wonder sealing a couple of those games? It's just the new college football. And I get it that everybody wants to have a season like Indiana is having, and I know a lot of fans, and I'm not disagreeing with you. Think back to some of the seasons over the last handful of Fleck years where they had their opportunities to win the West and get to Indianapolis, and they didn't. And I would just say, you have to remember the 30,000-foot view of this for people that aren't, you know, invested as you were. The preseason Vegas win total, which I keep coming back to, and I know a lot of folks don't agree with me on this. People, no one thought Minnesota was going to be any good coming into the year. They opened with a 4.5 win total, which was tied with Purdue. Mm-hmm. Now, by the time you ended up getting it, it was probably 5 or 5.5, but 7 regular season wins is a clear win for what a lot of people that make a lot of money out in Las Vegas think. I understand that you only won one of the rivalry games, with Wisconsin being the lone one. You had your opportunities against Penn State. You had your opportunities against Iowa and Michigan, and you weren't able to do it. I just think if you can't, after a game like that, where you beat down Wisconsin in Madison, that's the 4th victory for Fleck over Wisconsin in his 8 years. And the last thing I'll say before I open it up, I guess we'll start with Derek, is, Derek, I'm 32 years old. And before PJ Fleck took over this program, Minnesota had beaten Wisconsin 4 times in my lifetime. Now, since Fleck has taken over, he's 4-4. He's won 3 of the last 4 against the Badgers. I mean, he's won 4 times in the last 8 years, where prior to him in my lifetime, Minnesota had beaten Wisconsin 4 times. It's not lost upon me. I'm not telling you to give PJ Fleck another extension. I would tell you this, I want no part of that unless all of the money goes to the assistants, which I know there's a lot of people that don't want me talking about that at this point, but I just think if you take back now with a little bit of time here over the next month before the bowl game to kind of think about this season, sure, there's some what could have been, but I also think that if you can't look at this season for what this team was, and there's the parts of it that you want back, but to me, it's a success, and I don't know, where do you kind of stand in all that long-winded soapbox?
Well, I think, first of all, I would consider the season a success. I think that Vegas had it 4.5, 5.5. I think I don't want to speak for the fan base, but 6-6, I think, was probably in a lot of people's heads. So 7-5 were judged on results, and I think that's a win. But a couple comments. I think you hit on some good points. For the diehard fan base, I do think this was a very emotional and in some ways exhausting season, and that's not in a bad way, but a lot of changes. The diehard part of the fan base has had to, of all fan base college football, have had to take on a lot of change over the last 3 or 4 years. The game has shifted fundamentally. What I would tell that portion of the fan base is just hang in there, because I believe for the non-incumbents, the non-blue bloods, the non-helmet schools, this change is for the better for programs like Minnesota, that the more parity, the more one-score games, all the things we talked about, I think is ultimately a win. And although it may not show up right away, I think people tend to view things in black and white, and they're saying, well, if this is so great, then why aren't teams like Minnesota and Indiana just all of a sudden winning and competing for national championship? It's not that black and white. The change is happening, but I think it's a process. But I also think that those high emotion one score games are actually great to grow your casual fan base. Because at the end of the day, this is about providing entertainment. And in some ways it's about providing branding for these universities. And these games are more entertaining. Now, some people that are really vested in it and really diehard, it drives them nuts, because you got to sit into a back and forth game where the outcome isn't determined until the final minute or two, and you're just sweating bullets. And in some ways, that's not as enjoyable. You like to have the outcome decided earlier. But for a casual fan base across the country and any of these teams, this is going to grow the audience, because it's just more entertaining to watch, to not know the outcome and to have more back and forth. And this goes all the way up to, we could pick any number. I mean, just, you know, the same night that Minnesota played, the Georgia Tech Georgia game is one example of probably 15 or 20 games this year involving those blue bloods or those helmet schools that was way more in doubt, or in some cases upsets, than we would have ever had even 3 years ago. So in summary, I would just say the college game is changing. I think it's for the better. I think this is going to be more entertaining. There's going to be more parity, and I think it's better for programs like Minnesota.
Yep. I think we stopped there.
I don't know. I'm sorry, Luke. I know we got long-winded there, but
I think we just stopped there. Like, I couldn't agree more with both of you. It's been a very fun season. It's always great to be able to cap off the season by beating your rival. It's even greater when you can end their 22-year bowl streak. Watching the team run to get the axe, and how quickly they removed the Wisconsin padding from the goal, from the goalpost, so that they couldn't get into some video or photos as the seniors were chopping down the axe, they were chopping down the goalpost with the axe. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm too involved with the social media, with Twitter, Blue Sky, whatever, or even Gopher Illustrated. There's a lot of passionate people about this team, which I appreciate, yeah. Which is how I can afford my mortgage, which is how I can do a lot of different things in life. But like, if you can't find joy in ending a 22 consecutive seasons of Wisconsin winning, I'm not here to tell you it was an overarching, without a doubt, give PJ Fleck the extension season, but 7-5, 5 Big Ten wins. You end Wisconsin season with a 17-point road victory. If you can't find joy in that, I don't know what to tell you, because it's one of those things where it doesn't happen all the time. They've only, like I said, before Fleck took over, they had only beaten Wisconsin 4 times in my lifetime. They're now 4-4, won 3 of the last 4. Like, if you just, you have to be open to saying, I can enjoy a day like that and still say there may be more meat left on the bone. But now you get into portal season. Now you get into National Signing Day. Now they get to find out what warmer bowl destination they get to. And I'll do one last shameless plug. 75% off at Gopher Illustrated to support me, to get behind the scenes of who they're going to be targeting in the portal, who Derek's going to be talking to, and their agents. I know Derek won't comment on that. But, I mean, this is where it gets a little fun to see what the roster construction is going to be over these next 4 or 5 weeks. So 75% off an annual at Gopher Illustrated through Monday. So if you've got a Gopher fan in your life or you're thinking this is going to be the thing that gets me off the fence, I'd love to have you. I know Luke's favorite thread is the Ask Ryan Burns Anything thread, which, by the way, now has over 5 million views. Like, it's bananas. So come be a part of our community. My last shameless plug. And for all of you who just listen to us throughout the entire season, Luke, I think I can speak for both of us, and I'll let you have the floor too. Thank you so much for letting Luke and I, a couple of Roseville guys, just opine about this team and fill some airways and fill some time.
Yeah, Derek, thanks again for joining us this season. It's been a fun breakdown. We'll come back for the bowl game.
My pleasure, guys.
Yeah, it's been fun to have you. We had other contributors this year. Daniel House, filled in for Derek when Derek wasn't able to join. It was fun to have him. We had Dan Owen this year talking bowls. Hopefully we have Dan Owen again back. That was just way too much fun. And thanks to all of our sponsors that make it possible, like the Burns Insurance Agency, like Team Dinkytown Real Estate, who is doing some great stuff to help athletes and Dinkytown athletes, and also to Home Field Apparel. They've been a great partner, a long-term partner as well. So again, thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.